Noah of the Chicago Bulls, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see how the ball's rolling about today.
All right, basketball historian Tim Gallagher joins Chicago Bullseye again in our continuing discussion of the history of Olympic basketball, U.S. Olympic basketball, USA basketball. Really enjoying the conversation. Last episode we finished on the 92 Dream Team. What we're going to do now is go forward to the present day with some discussion on the current iteration and their performance so far. So let's start out at 96. Tim, thanks a lot for jumping out of the Bullseye. I'd love to get started. And let's go to 96.
Great. Well, great to talk with you, Fred. And again, we'll do a brief capsule history, fast forward, you know, up to today with the USA basketball team. So as you mentioned, we picked up from the 92 Dream Team, which people are very familiar with that, and the documentary about that team, and kind of led things into the basketball future for USA basketball using our NBA players. So in 96, the Olympics were in Atlanta, so on our home turf, of course. And that was kind of a carryover from the Dream Team. There were still five members of the 92 Dream Team that played: Barkley, Pippen, Karl Malone, David Robinson, and John Stockton. And then you add Shaq, Grant Hill, Olajuwon to that group. And Lenny Wilkins was the head coach. So things just kind of kept cruising along. Average margin of victory, almost 32 points a game. So things basically were a carryover from the 92 team. Now, in 2000, when the Olympics moved to Sydney, Australia, that's where there was a little bit of foreshadowing of some of the problems that we're going to get into in a minute here in terms of the U.S. dominance over this international competition. So the 2000 team, the roster was solid, but not Dream Team-level type players. I mean, there's a number of guys that are going to be Hall of Famers: Vince Carter, Kevin Garnett, Jason Kidd, Ray Allen, Alonzo Mourning. Those were essentially the key players, leading scorers. Rudy Tomjanovich was the coach, so kind of an understated guy who'd won some championships with the Rockets, obviously, but I still almost put a little asterisk by those championships because those are the years that Jordan sat out. So if Rudy T. Should pay
right.
Michael Jordan every time he sees him for deciding to take a little vacation from the NBA, because that enabled those Rockets teams to get a couple of rings. In that 2000 Sydney Games, in the semifinals, there was the first really close game since, in many Olympics. And they barely beat a Lithuanian team. The star player for Lithuania was a guy named Šarūnas Jasikevičius, who listeners probably have to dig deep in their memory banks for him, because he was a solid but not spectacular player at the University of Maryland under Gary Williams, and then played some with the Pacers, but mostly played overseas. But he went off against the U.S., played a great game. It was a great team game, and the U.S. hung on for a two-point win in the semifinals in Sydney. So I remember how shocking that was, that game was so close. And again, the Lithuanian team,
yep.
There were a few guys that had cups of coffee in the NBA and played overseas, but not names that you would think could go toe-to-toe with Kevin Garnett, Vince Carter, Jason Kidd, the names I mentioned. But anyway, the U.S. hung on, nipped Lithuania by two in the semifinals, and then beat France by 10, which, not a great margin of victory in the gold medal game. So things still kept rolling along in terms of gold medals, but there were some scares there and close games that led to another international competition that wasn't the Olympics, but it's important to note because it was a bridge between the 2000 and 2004 games, and that was in the FIBA World Championships. And the FIBA World Championships, just for the listeners' sake, other than the Olympics, that's the other opportunity where nations compete against each other in basketball. And to the rest of the world, it's always been a huge, huge deal. But to the U.S., not so much. And it's typically not played in the United States, but in 2002, it was in Indianapolis. I didn't go to any of those games, but I remember watching them. And I remember it was kind of shocking to see how poor the crowds were at a lot of those games not involving the U.S. team, which you'd think Indiana being the basketball hotbed that it was, it somehow just didn't have the appetite for the international competition. But anyway, the U.S. sent a pretty strong team of players, but again, kind of like that 2000 Olympic team, it was not the top level players. For instance, Shaq and Kobe, who were at the peak of their games at that time, didn't play. So it was players like Paul Pierce, Baron Davis, Reggie Miller. So an okay roster coached by George Karl. Well, the U.S. finished in sixth place in the FIBA World Championships. So on our home soil and finishing in sixth place was really an embarrassment. And the other thing, as we've kind of talked about, as the decades have gone on in international competition, these international players are now key players on NBA teams. And in the 2002 FIBA Championships, players like Ginobili from Argentina, Pau Gasol of Spain, Vlade Divac, and Peja Stojakovic, who listeners might remember, played quite well with the Kings, and a number of teams, but on those really good Sacramento Kings teams that couldn't quite get over the hump. And I believe Peja did get a championship ring late in his career on that Dallas team with Nowitzki that won. A couple other players that sort of emerged in those FIBA World Championships in Indy were Yao Ming and Dirk Nowitzki as well. It's fairly early in their career. So you can see by the names of those international players and probably all those that I mentioned, Yao, Dirk, Gasol, and Ginobili will be Hall of Famers. I don't know, Vlade probably won't and Stojakovic won't. But anyway, that was such a disappointing performance by the U.S. in the World Championships that, again, things are starting to look a little more bleak. And I also looked that I guess Paul Pierce and George Karl got into some sort of a dispute during that tournament that Paul Pierce was the leading scorer but ended up being benched in a key game by George Karl. So there was a little unrest off the floor, I guess you'd say, as well, or just with temperament and personality. So basically a disaster overall in terms of what happened in Indianapolis. Well, now we jump two more years, so from 2002 in those FIBA World Championships in Indy to the 2004 Athens Olympics, coached by Larry Brown. Now we're back to a roster that I think most of us would be pretty happy with, where you've got a young Dwayne Wade, you've got Carmelo, a young LeBron, Tim Duncan, Iverson. Well, the U.S. lost by 19. That's 19 points to Puerto Rico in the first round. So just in pool play, got whipped by Puerto Rico. So right away, out of the gate, something was seriously wrong.
I had no idea LeBron was on that team. Really?
He was.
He
was.
When they were rookies then? They had just completed their rookie season. Wade would have completed his rookie year. Is that correct?
I believe you're right. I don't have the dates right in front of me in terms of what draft did they...
They would have been in... I'm trying to... He was drafted when Heinrich was drafted. Maybe that was their second year. I think
very early in their careers, obviously. And then the other thing, they had an early loss to Lithuania. So Lithuania, remember, with our guy Jasikevičius that scared us in 2002, well, they beat the U.S. again in an early round. Now, the U.S. did regroup and made it back to medal play and ended up getting a revenge victory over Lithuania for the bronze medal. But, again, not a gold medal in 2004, even with a lineup like that. But, again, Wade, Carmelo, LeBron, obviously we know now, 12 years later, what their careers became. But at that stage, the international stage and integrating with each other and the rest of that team under Larry Brown, it didn't work. And Argentina...
It didn't work, though. I mean, can you recall what was the issue on that team specifically? We're talking Olympic basketball, obviously that's important. What was going on? Did they not have enough shooting in that defense? What was the issue?
Well, I think shooting was an issue there. And the teams that they lost to are kind of what we're seeing a little bit now, right, where these teams that on the eyeball test, you'd think the U.S. would crush these teams, but in terms of just toughness, teamwork, kind of being on the same page, having a national program where these guys, even though some of these international players are playing in the NBA or playing on European League teams, they've been in a system in their country and a philosophy and style of play, which isn't quite as tight as what we've had in the U.S., even though we've got incredibly talented athletes. So with the 2004 Olympics, so as I mentioned, USA regrouped, and they got to the semifinal game, but Argentina beat them in the semifinals. As I mentioned, then the U.S. did regroup and beat Lithuania for a bronze medal. But that Argentina team, and interesting we talk about them because kind of the core players of that team now are at the twilight of their basketball careers and just finished things up here in Rio. And so you've got Ginobili, Luis Scola, and Nocioni, obviously Nocioni, a former Bull. And then another player, Fabricio Oberto, who some listeners might remember played on the Spurs and got a championship ring with the Spurs. Played, you know, just briefly in the NBA, but was a very serviceable center on, you know, very good San Antonio team. So Argentina, those guys were in the prime of their careers at that time. And, you know, again, some of them are still playing in the NBA, even though Scola and Ginobili are kind of at the tail end of it. So after that 2004 loss, and again, when you, again, look back to the 2002 FIBA World Championship disaster and then the scare in Sydney with Lithuania and not dominating France in the gold medal game, USA basketball finally decided it's time to get things changed around here. And that's when Jerry Colangelo took over to head up USA basketball. And then Coach K, of course, was his selection as the coach, and that's what we've seen now since 2008. And interesting to note from our Chicago listeners that Colangelo and Coach K are both Chicago natives, as most people probably know, but kind of interesting that the people that are running the show for USA basketball have that common thread. And obviously we can jump ahead now to 2016, but 2008 then was the next Olympics under Colangelo, Coach K leading the team, and they called that the Redeem Team, and Redeem because of some of the less than impressive performances from previous Olympics and then that FIBA in Indianapolis. And so, and in fact, the U.S. in this Olympics this year here against Spain in the semifinals, they played Spain in 2008 in the gold medal game. And I remember that game very, very vividly in terms of a very highly contested game. I looked up the score. It was 118-107. So you're not seeing scores like that in the Olympic Games right now.
And that's a 40-minute game.
Exactly. So, but I remember that game being very, very highly contested, and it was definitely in doubt until the last few minutes. And I remember in particular Carmelo and Kobe and Dwayne Wade hitting some big shots, hitting some key buckets at critical times. And that's when I've always respected those guys as players, but it was kind of when the chips are down, the U.S. gold medal on the line, those guys stepped up.
I also remember from that game is Paul Gasol having his way pretty much with the Americans for
right.
a large percentage of that game.
Right. Well, there's a couple faces on that Spain team from 2008 that are still playing. Paul Gasol, Ricky Rubio, Rudy Fernandez, Calderon's on the team, but not really getting much playing time here in 2016. Also, Marc Gasol was just emerging in 2008. He's injured and not playing in this Olympics, but he was a key player, and I remember him really starting to emerge in 2008, and we've seen he was first team All-NBA two seasons ago, so you see where he's evolved as a player. And then there's another Spain player, Juan Carlos Navarro, who they call La Bamba for his long-range shooting. He had a cup of coffee with the Grizzlies. He played, I believe, just one year in the NBA, but he's had a very solid career in the Euro Leagues for many seasons and just a fearless long-range shooter. So that core of players in 2008 for Spain they played against a lot of these players in NBA competition, and they were pretty fearless and gave the U.S. all they could handle.
Really interesting. So that was in 08. Let's go to 12 and then talk about this season's iteration, or this year's iteration of the Olympic team. And I'd like to get your take on how they're doing. And I think surprisingly in a number of close games. Let's go to 2012.
Yeah, well, 2012 was London, and I don't know that there was anything that notable. You know, pretty dominant team. Obviously, when you've got LeBron and Carmelo and that core that have played great in international. This is the second round now, second Olympics, with Colangelo and Coach K in charge. They'd gotten their system together in terms of picking the team. So I didn't really find anything that notable about London other than we just took care of business as we expected to. And then that brings us now to 2016. And just a couple thoughts. And one is you could argue that the four best players in the NBA are not playing in this Olympics, at least American players. So you've got LeBron, Curry, Kawhi Leonard, Westbrook. So they'd certainly be on my short list. So, and I know part of it is injuries, part of it's just rest, part of it's maybe some level of politics that those guys aren't playing, but we should still be able to fill a roster with some pretty dominant players. So as I've been watching these games, to me, it's just been kind of oddly unfulfilling. I want them to do so well, but it just seems like their cohesiveness, their lapses defensively, they just seem to me, they're playing like it's an all-star game rather than, you know, this is the highest level of competition and we need to execute and be on it every second. And I just don't see that urgency in how they play. And a couple of observations of that. Part of it is just time and score things, where it seems like as long as these guys have been playing basketball, especially the level they are now, they should have some sense that, okay, if we have this amount lead with this amount of time, it's probably not the time to just hoist up a three. Let's run a little clock. And I've seen over and over again early shot clock threes very late in the game, and just decisions that kind of puzzled me in terms of if the object is to win the game and not let the other team get the ball back in this, and, you know, with the shorter three-point line, you've seen what can happen. It looks like we've got a game in hand, and the next thing you know, it's a three-point game with under a minute to go, and the U.S. is fighting for their lives. So it's just a little odd to me, the dynamics of it, and I wish I was enjoying it more.
Completely agree. I don't see any ferocity on defense. I mean, I think this team is bought in. I said on Twitter, less the tips than the 14-15 Bulls.
I saw that. I got a laugh out of that. Well, and see, Coach K and Tibbs on the bench, and I know it's a no-win situation for them in some ways because unless they're winning by 20 or more, everyone's asking, well, what's wrong? So, you know, dominance is expected. So if it's anything less than that, it's disappointing. And then when these games are going down to the last seconds and it's in doubt, it's more concerning than anything else. So I get it how it's a no-win situation. And these teams are all better than you think, right? Even if there's some somewhat depleted rosters for these foreign teams, right, where, you know, a Dante Exum or a Ben Simmons isn't playing for Australia, but they still have a cast of NBA players with championship rings, and maybe they're not the alpha dogs of their teams, but they're NBA-level players that understand how to play and play together. And I'm not totally enamored with the U.S. roster either. I know we kind of joked about the 84 team that Knight picked with players like John Konkak and Joe Klein and Jeff Turner. But I think there is some value of having some role players, some non-alpha dog players in the mix. You know, and again, I don't know, I'm going to rattle off a few names that I thought maybe should have got a closer look to be on the roster, other than a Harrison Barnes or a Kyle Lowry or DeAndre Jordan, for example. You know, Kenneth Faried, and I know he's played on past Olympics and was a key energy guy and rebounder, and a guy that doesn't need the ball to be effective. You know, somebody like Kyle Korver, who I know is
like a title. Or like just a fantastic interior defender. To me, the guy that really stands out with me, and I'm extremely frustrated with him, is DeMarcus Cousins. You know,
you can make an argument he's probably one of the three most talented players in the NBA. I really believe that. He's an incredibly talented big man who I remember vividly absolutely embarrassing Joakim Noah in a game in 2014 and just being, you know, all everything. And then 4 months later, Gasol was actually, I missed that game. He comes to Chicago and he gets thoroughly dominated because he's not playing hard. And I never feel like that guy is giving anywhere near 100%. It's probably 50, 60% all the time. And on the defensive end, for all the Bulls fans that want this guy to come to Chicago, he guards, he's just every bit as bad as Paul Gasol on pick-and-roll defense, if not worse. He's a terrible pick-and-roll defender.
Right. Well, I've never been a big DeMarcus Cousins fan. I've shared that on podcasts basically from the time we started talking. So he is a real enigma, and he must have some people, influential people in his corner that he even got on the roster, because someone with his kind of attitude and track record, it's hard to imagine that a Jerry Colangelo and Coach K would put up with that or tolerate that. So somebody did some great selling to convince them that this guy was worthy of having on the team. I know he hasn't had any meltdowns or anything from that angle, but you're right, his focus defensively. And that's where I'm thinking some other players. You mentioned the Taj Gibson, some other names I kind of had just as quote-unquote role players, and I don't mean that with any disrespect to these guys, because on their teams they're stars or certainly very key players, but Paul Millsap, Kevin Love, the Plumlee that's on the Blazers, heck, even someone like McDermott who plays somewhat like a Euro, right, where, sure, maybe defensively he's lacking a little bit, but he's a lights-out shooter, and with the way the ball rotates in a lot of these international teams, there's a lot of Doug McDermott guys out there, right? So if his name was Bogdanovich, we'd probably be even more excited about him than we are.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, absolutely. So you feel pretty confident, though, they're going to go ahead and win the gold here?
I do. You know, they got off to a really slow start against Argentina. I think they were down, I want to say it was like 19-8 or maybe even more, but they obviously righted the ship and cruised to victory. So even though the performances haven't been elite, I think there's enough talent and tradition and coaching and all the elements that we need that will win the gold. It seems like it's been a little less than I'd hoped. And, you know, I guess the other thing that was interesting for me to ponder was that for all these other sports, we're seeing our absolute best athletes. And so, with basketball, we're not, right? I mentioned the names of people that aren't there. And of course, I'll excuse the ones with injury. But for gymnastics, swimming, track, there's people that are, they're qualifying. They're not missing the Olympics. So in some ways, it's kind of disappointing that we don't have our absolute best when we put this team out there every 4 years.
Yeah, but I guess, for basketball, if we're really being honest with ourselves, the highlight of every guy's career in this is going to be an NBA championship, probably more important than a gold medal, you know, to these guys. It may not be to the fans, but to, you know, LeBron James or to these great players, there's something higher than the Olympic gold medal. And that's not the case for a lot of these sports, right? You know, gymnastics, this is it. You know, there's nothing
right. Right, and that's a great point, and I know that would be a whole other topic where, you know, it's come up in the past where Dirk Nowitzki's wanted to play for the German national team, and Mark Cuban has not been thrilled about that because of the amount of money he's paying him and what a key franchise player he is for Dallas, and there's some interesting concerns and dynamics about that in terms of injury, and, you know, thankfully, well, Paul George did lose a season due to international competition. He's thankfully bounced back and he was returned to all-star form. But that is an interesting dynamic to all this. And like you said, the NBA title is really, in the minds of those players and the owners, a higher level than an Olympic gold medal.
And I do find it interesting, though, that a guy like Carmelo Anthony, I think you can make the case that he's the best overall, I could argue be the best Olympian ever as a basketball player. He's played fantastic in many Olympics, especially this one. I thought he played just great so far, probably the best guy in the team so far. And if he doesn't win an NBA title, how is his career going to be remembered? You know, it's kind of interesting. And a guy like Durant, who I don't think has played that well in this Olympics, you know, if he ends up winning an NBA title, that's going to be a lot more important for his legacy.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. And, yeah, it's interesting to mention that in terms of Carmelo, because people aren't going to remember all the gold medals he had, and he's the USA's all-time leading scorer. And I think he has been money in all the international competitions I've seen, and kind of the alpha dog among alpha dogs in terms of, give me the ball, we need a basket, I'll take care of it. It's great to see that. And that goes back to that 2018 against Spain. And I've always liked Carmelo. I was at the Final Four in New Orleans when Syracuse won it all, and he was clearly the man carrying the boat.
Beat Kirk Heinrich in that Kansas team.
That's right. Exactly. So, but you're right, with his NBA winning reputation has not been strong. So that is an interesting dynamic, and kind of proves the point that you just mentioned, where some of these top players, I'd love to have seen Kawhi Leonard play in the Olympics. Just, you know, who's going to score against Kawhi Leonard, right? If you have some opponent on Argentina or Spain or France or whatever that's going off, Kawhi, go in there and lock him up. And it happens, right? So just for my interest in watching, obviously I'd love to see some of those other guys that we mentioned out there. But
yeah,
I think they'll take care of business. It's you know, it's just an odd dynamic watching, because some of these other teams, where it's kind of like watching an early round NCAA tournament game where you've got a mid-major playing a, you know, elite team, right? You got Yale playing Baylor or something, and the eyeball test is Baylor should be crushing these guys, but you get a team like Yale that they're better than you think, they're probably a little more athletic than you think, and now they're executing their offense, and they're patient, and they're playing right, and now Baylor's in a dogfight, right? That's kind of how these games are playing out in the Olympics.
Amen. Tim, thanks for jumping on a Bullseye. Great discussion about the history overall these last three episodes, the history of USA basketball. A lot of fun. We're looking forward to having you on next week. We're going to go over some basketball books. Maybe also, if you don't mind, coming up with a list of your favorite basketball movies. Love to do that as we get through these summer months. Looking forward to the season starting in October.
Great. That sounds good, Fred. Enjoy the rest of the summer, and we'll watch Team USA hopefully bring home the gold from Rio.
Sounds good, my man. Talk to you soon.
Take care.